Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk Archetypes with your host, renowned intuitive and author, Roy Solberg.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. We are going to keep exploring the hedonist. You know, I told you we were going to do this through the month of December. So let me refresh your memory about the hedonist archetype. The hedonist loves life, all aspects of life. And the illuminated hedonist appreciates the gift of being alive and being here. Happy children are the greatest example of hedonism. They're aware of their senses, they express them, heaven knows they express them. Today I've invited Deb Karpek, who exemplifies the hedonist, and in a moment she's going to share with us how she got to this joyful place in her life, and how she did it, what the setbacks were, what the challenges were. But first, I want to briefly share my thoughts on the tragedy in Newtown this past week. As you know, that which breaks us down breaks us open. And the deaths of 20 children last week broke us open. I cried for 3 days, along with my family, along with my friends, all around the world. And on Sunday, during my meditation, I asked Spirit, how are they? How are they doing? And this is, I want to share with you what I saw. It was a stage like a platform, and everyone was kind of crystal form-like. You could see the outlines, but you could see through them, and they were just sparkling. All 20 lined up in front, and like typical kids, they were squirming. The boys were elbowing each other. The girls were whispering, and all of them very happy. Behind the children stood the adults, and behind the adults was a large angel-type figure. Imagine a giant A, and it spread from one side of the stage to the other, supporting and protecting these little souls. And the message was, we're good, we're fine. So next I ask myself, as I do in tough situations, never as tough as this, but in tough situations, I go back to the basics. What do I believe? I believe in reincarnation. I believe we all have a purpose that we come into this life to fulfill. I believe that each of us has a gift to place on the table of mankind. And I believe there is a gift in everything that we experience. There is something to be learned. And as senseless and tragic as this situation was, I made myself look for that gift. So what if, maybe, just maybe, this group of souls made the agreement that they would come back to Earth to help us regain our humanity, regain peace. And maybe, just maybe, it would wake us up. It would break us open to the point we would be able to reconnect to our heart. And maybe their gift to mankind, as I said, was simply to break us down, break us open, so that in our sorrow we can create and find grace and harmony and peace in our lives and in our worlds. So does knowing all this ease our pain? No, it doesn't. Will it stop making us ask why? Probably not. Will it ease the anger that we feel? I don't know about you, but it's going to take a while for mine to subside. Children, as I said, are the epitome of the hedonist archetype. They love life. They embrace everything, sight, sound, touch, smell. They are the laughter, and the light. So it has been left to us who remain to honor our lives and to make the changes we've been resisting both personally and nationally. It is left to each of us to honor these souls and their gift and to live our life fully, to appreciate it in the hedonist archetype. We can honor their lives and sacrifice by opening our hearts to ourselves, our family, our community, and our nation. And we have work to do, and we can have work to do on their behalf as well as our own. So whatever's in your way, whatever you need to clear, let's get it cleared. Whatever you need to choose to express your heart, come on, let's get started. So with that thought, I want to introduce you to my friend Deb, who is a Reiki master. She is the owner of Peaceful World Reiki. And like the hedonist, she really appreciates the gifts of life. So she's going to share with us her journey, how she made her dream into reality, and the joys and challenges, as I mentioned, that got her where she is today. So welcome, Deb.
Hi, Roy. Thank you.
Yeah. So we met, 2004, I think we decided.
We did. I January of 2004, I started to take a class with you. Yeah.
So tell me how that happened. I love the synchronicity of this.
Oh,
as I remember,
it's a great story. it's a great story. My story actually started in the year 2000 when I woke up. And when I woke up, like you had said, all of my senses came alive. I just feel like I had been granted a new life. And so I started doing things I hadn't done before. Writing and taking classes and sort of moving into more of a metaphysical type of thinking. And I remember coming home from work one day, and it was right around the holidays in December of 2003. And I was standing in my kitchen. I had just walked in from work. I still had my coat on and my boots. And I said out loud, I want to start working with a new teacher. I need to make a commitment. I really felt like I had all these ideas and all of this enthusiasm and excitement, but I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have a mentor. And so I said out loud, I need a mentor. I need a new teacher. And I went out to get my mail, and in my mailbox was a postcard from you addressed to me, and I have no idea how I got on your mailing list because I didn't know you. And it said, join us for a year of living creatively. And it started in January of 2004, like 2 or 3 weeks later. And without even thinking, because if I had thought about it, I wouldn't have done it. I called you immediately and signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I even gave you my credit card number. Just take it all. and I started a year of living creatively, and I met with you monthly with a group of creative individuals, and it changed my life.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
I love that story.
Yeah, me too. It was a huge turning point.
And it is so synchronistic, isn't it? When you are ready, someone appears. And you're very good at listening to your intuition and your inner voice, are you not?
I am now. I've always had it, and it speaks to me very loudly. And for most of my life, when I was a child, I listened to it. And then I went through a period of adulthood where I did not listen to it. And then, like I said, I woke up in the year 2000 because I heard some very specific messages, and I thought if I didn't listen to them, I would die. I was dying inside. My spirit was dying. And so, yes, one of the first things I heard that year in 2000 was I went out into the woods a lot. I spent a lot of time in the woods meditating and walking. And I would walk by this old oak tree in Whitnall Park in Franklin, and it would say to me, go to Sedona. And I'd think, am I losing my mind? I'd walk by this tree every day, and it would say, go to Sedona. So I did. It took me about 30 days, and I did. And that was a life-changing experience because I heard from the voice, I call it the voice, that I would receive some messages when I was there. And I did. I received a number of messages, and I followed through. And I find that when I receive these messages, especially if they sound like something I would not think of, but it's not me or my ego or my mind. It is something greater than me, and I listen to it. And it's amazing when I allow that because my life, over the last 12 years, has completely turned upside down and shifted.
In a good way.
In a very good way. I'm now living, right outside of Sedona, which was my dream.
I just love it. Now, in that you're living creatively, that was one of the things that you said you wanted, was it not? Wasn't it at that time?
Absolutely, yes. And that's almost exactly the way I said it when I was standing in my kitchen looking for a mentor, knowing I needed to find a way to channel and express my creative gifts. Like I said, I was just bursting with things, but I didn't know what to do with them. I needed somebody to help me manifest them or help me, I needed a guide. I tend to like to work in groups or with teachers. And, there came the postcard and there came you. And there came this big, scary group of very gifted, expressive people. And I thought, I don't fit in here. you know, at that time, I did not have much self-esteem, if any. I knew that I loved to do things, but I didn't think I was very good at what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a lot of... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, share your impression of the group. I know you had your husband drive you, you said, to...
Oh, right. I used to... That's important. Right. I had to pay in advance, so, you know, I would go.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're
I had
committed.
To have my husband drive me every month because I was afraid that if he did not drive me and I was left to my own resources, I would drive somewhere else. I would chicken out and not go. But
I love that
very
story.
Supportive. Well, I know how I self-sabotaged. So, mm-hmm, but I also,
mm-hmm,
there was another part of me that was just bursting to be among this group. Even
mm-hmm
though they scared the pants off me, there were artists, there were writers, there were singers. There were such gifted, creative people, and I would sit in there and think, oh, man, this is way out of my league, you know. But I think there was a little piece of me that knew I belonged there.
Mm-hmm.
But
you wouldn't have come back if you didn't feel there was a piece of you that belonged.
Yeah, that's true. And I was excited about coming back,
mm-hmm,
about equal measure of spirit as I was.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was... It was nice to think that I could actually be a part of that. It was the you know, the illumination was beginning, that the real
mm-hmm
me was starting to open up and come out. And this is a huge thing for me, and this is why I like groups and teachers. They
mm-hmm
began to see things in me before I did. And because I respected them so much, the fact that they admired me and my work, I thought, well, you know, Maybe there is something there.
Maybe there's something there. Yeah.
So they helped me open me up, you know. And so did you, by the way.
I love the story about how that shifted for you, that you felt
yes,
part of the group.
Do you want me to tell that story?
Yeah, I do.
I think it was in March, our third meeting,
mm-hmm,
and I had been working on creating a website for some products that I had, some jewelry and some writing, and I was going to debut the website April 1st, April Fool's Day, and
mm-hmm
so it was in the March class, and when it was my turn to share, I started to talk about my product, which was a little pin named Sheba, and I was really nervous and really insecure, feeling way out of my comfort zone. And so I prefaced my talk with that. I started saying, oh, you know, I don't know if this is very good, and I'm really nervous about it. I just really negative, Nellie. And you
mm-hmm
you shouted, stand up. And I thought, oh, my God, you're talking to me, you know, me who likes to lay low under the radar. And so I stood up,
uh-huh,
and you said, tell the class you are good at what you do. And I said, no, thank you. And you said, tell them you are good at what you do. And so I squeaked it out in a little mouse voice, I am good at what I do. And you made me say it again. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I'm just going to quit. I was going to just walk out of there. But then I remembered that I'd paid in advance for the year and that my husband wasn't coming for another 2 hours and that I really did want to be there, but I wanted you to leave
right
me alone. I felt like you were picking on me. And just when I thought, I was off the hook. Oh, I know. And just when I thought I was off the hook, you said, I want you to go around to every person. We were sitting like in a half moon, half circle, and tell each one of them that you are good at what you do. And I said, no, absolutely not. I can't do that. I can't. I don't have that in me. And you persuaded me, as you do, lovingly. And so I started, and again, the little mouse squeaky voice, I am good at what I do. And I was just shaking and on the verge of tears, and I was angry. And I got to about the fifth or sixth person, and it was one woman who I was so intimidated by because she was so powerful and beautiful and strong. And I leaned into her, and I had this little pin, this little Sheba, who was sort of my alter ego. And I leaned into her and squeaked it out, and she said, do you love her? Do you love your product? And I said, oh, I do. I absolutely do. She said, well, aren't you in her? And I said, yes, I am. And then something just clicked. And she said, well, then say it. And so I stood up and I raised up my arms and I said, I am good at what I do. And I was just screaming it. And I think I was swearing and jumping up and down. Everybody was clapping. And And that was a huge shift, and I was crying, and
yep.
I thought, you know what, I am good at what I do, because I realized I loved what I did.
And I
everything
still have
I do
the sheep of him. Yeah,
do you?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love her.
I do. I do. I still have my little Sheba pin. She was very, very cute and very creative.
Yeah, it was. And that was sort of my way into it. I made her my little alter ego so I could put her out in the world before me. But she really is me, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that at the time. In retrospect, I see that.
And I want to point out to the listeners that that is a third chakra issue. That is owning what you do. And that was what was fulfilled in that exercise. I do that quite often to people. When I see them not, you know, they are grounded, they're creative, but they don't own who they are or that creativity. And being able to speak it out loud, and you can hear the difference in the vibration from that little mouse voice into the shouting and the dancing around. It's like, watch out, world, here I am. I am good at what I do.
And
then you own
it. Right in my belly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I felt it really, really strong there. And that shifted. My website went live. It was successful. You know, she got into galleries. I started getting a lot of feedback, and that just sort of like jumping off the diving board. It just propelled me, you know, into that creative arena. And really more important than that, owning my power, really.
Yes.
Really learning how to do that. And I lost the fear of coming to that class. I drove myself.
I love it.
Just
I did
really
not know this. Yeah, I didn't know all this at the time that you had your husband.
No, I didn't dare tell anybody that. I was ashamed of that. Like, oh, my God, my husband has to drive me. But, you know, I had to put certain measures in place to be able to do what I knew I needed to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's when we know ourselves well enough to say, okay, this is not going to be always comfortable for me, but I'm doing it anyway. This is where you kind of hold your nose and jump into. And what it does for us when we own our creative power and we own who we are, it takes us to a new frequency. And when you made that breakthrough, you went to a new frequency that then brought in all of this energy for your website and the product and so on and so forth. So after you left the Year of Living Creatively, where did you go next? What was your next level?
My next big thing is I was guided to Reiki. I think when I was in your class, I was a Reiki level 2, but I was doing it more for my own personal growth and development. But I started getting a lot of Reiki sessions and hearing that I was going to be a Reiki master and I was going to own a Reiki business and I was going to be a writer. And I was like, no, you know, I'm finally comfortable with this website. It's like things started happening really, really fast. I would have a thought that would manifest the next week. So I just did it. I just listened to the voice, and I went through and got my Reiki master teacher. Within a month to that day, I had 5 women in my living room, and I was teaching a Reiki class. Within a year to that date, I had a storefront and worked full-time practicing Reiki and teaching every weekend. It just exploded. And then, you know, Reiki for me is like a key unlocking a door. It just led me to all of my next adventures and teachers. And, you know, it stoked my creative powers. I started writing and getting published. And it just, everything, it's like a river. I jumped in and it's just flowing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can have a thought and it happens in the next day, month, hour, whatever it needs to happen. And so just learning how to listen to that voice and also to surround myself with people like those in your group. I joined other groups. I joined the 3-year program in the School of Integrative Psychology in Glendale. And so I was constantly challenged, constantly among people that thought the same way. And that sort of challenged me and pushed me, and I did it afraid a lot. That's one of my biggest mantras is do it afraid. I was a big scaredy cat most of my life, and I've learned how to just do it with the fear, because it's never as bad as I think it's going to be. It's always leading me to the next adventure.
That's an
interesting. And just gratitude and embracing it, you know.
But doing it with fear is an interesting model. You know,
yeah.
Usually we, well, all of us try to go, you know, to hide from fear or remove ourselves from fear. We always want to be safe. But for
I
you,
know,
it
and I hid. It, for me, it was just the opposite because I hid most of my life behind people and,
mm-hmm.
people and you
mm-hmm.
know, doing things for people, when, you know, not letting my own light shine. And I was at Alverno at a conference, and there was a young woman who spoke, and really successful young woman, and she told her story, and it was a horrible story of abuse and battered and,
mm-hmm.
you know, left alone at the age of 23 with 5 kids, and then she went on to get her master's and create this business for women, and somebody asked her, how did you do it? And she said, I did it afraid. And I heard
wow.
that, and it
wow.
just,
yeah.
I got goosebumps, like everything just
yep.
shivered in me, and I thought, well, if she can do it, what is wrong with me?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So that became
yeah.
my mantra because I was afraid. I would sign up for a class and not go. You know, I can't
uh-huh.
tell you how much money I spent at Redbird for writing classes that never went. Judy Bridges, who is the owner, who would tease me and say I was buying scholarships for all of the students because I would, you know, pay for a class and not go. And I she probably knew. I never told her it was because I was afraid. I always had a really good excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I used my fear, like some people use anger, to motivate them. And it was that edge that kept me going.
That's a wonderful piece of advice. So what we're, you know, the whole overview of this radio station is getting back to your authentic self. We work at, Michelle started the Authentic You Radio. So how do you stay authentic? What do you do daily to keep you centered and grounded and moving forward?
Okay, I have a daily practice, which I've been doing, oh gosh, coming on 10 years now. But it's really, it's shifted as I shift.
Mm-hmm.
I meditate, I pray, I write, and I exercise, and I do that first thing in the morning, because if I don't, it won't get done. I
right.
take a couple of hours just for me, and now I've been able to do that, because when I had my Reiki practice, I wouldn't start until 10 or 11, and I would put it in my day book, you know, it is, and it's me time, it's connecting with me, the writing, I do the morning pages, you know, Julia Cameron's
mm-hmm.
artist
right.
way, that really helps me check in with what's going on, even if I don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation and the prayer, the gratitude, and then I either walk or I swim, and that on all levels, mentally, physically, and emotionally, helps me check in with myself. And I do this every day.
Mm-hmm.
Some days longer than others, depending on what I need. I also get, you know, once a week, or 1 week I get a massage, the next week I get a Reiki appointment, the next week I go to the chiropractor. So I get a lot of body work done. I read a lot. I still take classes and surround myself with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And I be
mm-hmm.
in gratitude. And I ask, and I listen to the voice.
Listening to the voice is really important. I mean, not everyone hears a voice, but you get input. Where did you make the shift from hearing it to trusting it?
When that tree told me to go to Sedona, that was the shift, because I kept
mm-hmm.
hearing it. It just chattered every time I walked by it, and I went, and it was crazy. I used to say to my husband, you know, I quit drinking, and I have this clear head, and now I've discovered I'm schizophrenic, you know, because I'm, like, hearing all these voices.
Just with
it was
one
pretty
oak tree
loud at first.
Yeah. So you,
but,
have,
and
you
then,
are
you know,
now living in Sedona.
I am now living in Sedona.
And how did you, this was, how long did it take you? What was the process?
I first came here in 1994, November, and I was in a store uptown, in one of the little art stores, and I actually had a vision of me living here. I had sort of an out-of-body mystical experience, and
mm-hmm.
so I knew on some level I'd always be here. I didn't know how or why. And I started coming here in 2005 for my Reiki training, and I started developing connections and friends. I call them my Sedona family, my Reiki teachers and other
mm-hmm,
students.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that I was going to live here. Again, didn't know how, didn't know when. but I trusted. And then it didn't look like it was going to happen. My husband wasn't on board, and then I thought, well, maybe I'm going to have to come out here by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to have a long-distance marriage. So I just gave up the control, but not the dream. It's like, okay, I surrender. Whatever is supposed to happen is supposed to happen. I enrolled in that 3-year school. I said to my husband, you got 3 years. I'm going to be making a commitment to these classes, but at the end of the 3 years, I'm going to Sedona. And he said, yeah, whatever, okay. And I graduated last May, and we moved out here in July. But a lot of things happened real fast in the last 2 years that I could not have predicted. And if you would have told me even 2 years ago that where I would be living and what I would be doing, it wasn't in my plan. I mean, even though I planned to come out here, I didn't plan to do it this way. But it's exactly right. So I had to let go of the expectation and just keep putting that energy out there. And then it sort of just took off on a life of its own. And these things just synchronistically happened. And I finished the school and we came out here.
You know, there in goal setting, I always, you know, set your goals, be clear on what you want, visualize them, and then let go of the outcome.
Let go of the outcome.
Yeah, and just knew that, okay, if I'm supposed to be, and the key ingredient is trust. That's where we get off is not trusting.
And I had that, yeah. I knew and I trusted that we would get here. But I did have to let go of the outcome because it's exhausting to keep planning all this, you know, and controlling it. I mean, it went against with everything that I practiced. So I did have to let go. But it took me, you know, a good 10 years to figure that out,
And
then I did, and then it happened.
So we have just a couple of minutes left here, and how quickly time flies when we're chatting. So tell me what you are doing now, where you're working, how people can get in touch with you.
I am doing a couple of different things. I have my private practice, which is Peaceful World Reiki, and I'm practicing Reiki and teaching, and they can go to my website, debkarpek.com, and all of my contact info is there, and I'm in the Sedona area. I'm also working part-time. I'm developing a Reiki program at the Sedona Medical Center in their radiation oncology department. And that is just an honor to be able to do that. I've been doing that for a few months. And then my fun job, I work about 12 hours a week at my Reiki teacher's metaphysical store. I play with crystals all day and work with the Reiki students there. So it's really fun. It's a fun, full life, and I have lots of time now to sit in a chair and watch the colors change on the mountain and meet and take naps and hike in the river. It's lovely. It's just yummy.
And the photos that I see of you on your hiking trails just look just lovely. Lovely.
It's magical.
Yeah, I just want to hop out there and go hiking with you.
Well, come on out. I can't hike today because I have a broken toe, but
we're sending Reiki. We're sending Reiki energy to you. Is there any, we have like maybe 1 minute left, any just clear advice on someone who knows they need to make the transition or is looking to make a transition of change? What one piece of advice would you give them?
Listen to your voice. Listen to your inner voice, especially when it doesn't sound like how you think. Trust it and listen. And surround yourself with good teachers and role models. You know, be discerning. Choose good teachers. But for me, listening to the voice and surrounding myself with like-minded people who could help me grow. And do it right.
Love it.
Those three things.
Yeah, and do it afraid. I'm gonna type that and paste it on my wall. Thank you, my dear. We're down to 30 seconds. I love you dearly. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. I love
and
you
sharing
too.
Your
thank
story.
You.
And let's do this again.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. So we are down to the end of the show, and Friday is solstice. So happy solstice, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll tune in next week, and we'll talk archetypes. Thanks.